Welcome, everyone, to a brand new edition of the Eastern Lariat's Joshi exclusive spinoff podcast, Pure Heart, Pure Lariat. Shout out to JWP, the original catchphrase of that company. I'm your host, as always, Mr. VTG through Guts, Dylan Fox. And it's great to be back. It's great to hear the theme song, which everyone loves. That's one of my favorite songs as well. But we got a lot of comments on that. This is a very special show right now as I'm talking to my good friend and someone who was live at the Stardom Year-In Climax for 2019. He was at Corcoran Hall. We had to have him on. And the first episode of this show started with you on, and after you went to the Cinderella Tournament, and the year's going to end with you on after you went to the Year-In Climax. Wrestling's pro-res expert, W.H. Park. How are you doing?
You know, I'm good, Dylan. You know, I think I should have a nickname like you, Mr. VTG. I think I should be Mr. VTR, Victory Through Ramen.
Yes, that's right. You know, listen, I like to do it. I shouted out JWP with the show name, and obviously All Japan Women's Zinjo's phrase, Victory Through Guts, with my nickname. You can definitely be, you know, Victory Through Ramen. Ramen King, I can see that for sure. I saw your post on Twitter earlier where you had a good meal. Let me ask you something. Do you prefer eating before going to the shows or at Corcoran Hall and these other shows? I'm sure different arenas have different quality of food. But in general.
At Corcoran? Oh, fuck no. I don't like to eat the food at Corcoran Hall. It's shit.
Yes.
Listen, everyone who goes to Corcoran Hall and tells you, oh my god, the chicken tenders there are the most amazing things ever. They don't fucking live in Japan, okay? Because they're all fucking tourists, and they're all like in awe of being Corcoran Hall. So they think everything at fucking Corcoran Hall is like, oh my god, it's the best thing ever. I can't believe I'm eating this. And it's like, dude, that stuff is shit. Go to fucking Konbini and get some fucking chicken, like, get Family Mart chicken. It's way better. It's way better than the fucking chicken tenders at the fucking Corcoran Hall. Like, there's a guy on Twitter who keeps on, like, saying how great they are, who lives in Japan. I know he is. I'm not going to out it, but he's fucking with you people. He's fucking with you. He's like, what is that? It's gaslighting. He's fucking gaslighting you people. Sorry, I'm a little tired, so that's why I'm swearing a lot. I apologize to all the listeners.
That's true. This was a family show, but it's okay. Everyone's welcome to say whatever they want. There's no censorship on Pure Heart, Pure Lariat. We got to say what we got to say sometimes. And I think that you needed to set the record straight on the Corcoran Hall chicken, because that's a rumor that has grown in legend among pro wrest fans when they come there.
It's an urban legend.
It's an urban legend. Okay. Like, there are a lot of those in Japan. Yeah. The urban legends in Japan are like somebody is going to kill you or something. But now this one's just about bad chicken. So it is a good, you know, step up, I would say.
I'm not saying it's horrible, but it's not, it's like, people think it's like five fucking Michelin star rated or something. And it's not. Anyways, to answer the question, I prefer eating after going to Corcoran. Oh. I usually bring a snack into Corcoran. I go to the convenience store. I bring like an apple Danish or something, or, you know, like today I brought in some assorted nuts, like almonds, walnuts, peanuts. You know, I like to eat like brain food when I'm at Corcoran Hall, and I drank a delicious bottle of Coke Plus, which is a great version of Coca-Cola, you know? But after, me and my friend came back to Yokohama, because the show finished late, and we were like, okay, we can't eat here, because then we're gonna rush to catch the train. We should just catch the train now, get back to Shin Yokohama, which is where I'm staying, and then just eat around this area. And then my friend can walk home from the station, and I can just come back to my hotel, which is like, you know, a 5-minute walk from the station. So there you go. I do usually like to eat like dinner after the show. So there you go.
I feel you on that one. But first of all, before we move any further, there's a burning question I have to ask. Coke Plus. What is
Yes.
this? America doesn't have this Coke Plus. So I need to know the scoop on this, because I'm a longtime fan of Coca-Cola. And what makes Coke Plus better than the regular version, or all of their many versions?
All right, hold on a sec. Let me grab my bottle and let's see what it says.
This is a live review of Coke Plus right now on Pure Heart, Pure Larry. You won't get this on the other podcast. I promise you.
You won't get this at the Observer, man. Let me tell you something. You're not going to get this. Okay, here's my bottle of Coke Plus. Well, first of all, it has the health sign on it, so it's healthy for you. And everything's in kanji, so I can't fucking read it very well. There's zero calories, so there's no calories to Coke Plus. So it's like Coke Zero that way. I think the thing that makes Coke Plus like different from like Coca-Cola Zero is that it has like more minerals or some shit like that. The person who turned me on to this was my good friend Joey Bay, who you've heard on Cruel Summer and Thunderstruck, obviously. He's like, dude, have you tried this? Last time he was in Japan, I go, what's that? He's like, Coke Plus. I'm like, what's that? He goes, it's healthy for you. Okay. So I tried it, and it tastes a little bit different than regular Coke. Not that much different, but I tend to like Diet Coke, Coke Zero, or Coke Plus. I don't really like regular Coke unless I have no choice but to drink it.
Right. I like regular Coke if it's like McDonald's Coke or like, you know, some place from a restaurant like that. For some reason, that's the best version to me. But they introduced, I don't know if they had this in Japan, WH, but there's a new flavor of Coke called Cinnamon Coke for Christmas time.
Sounds fucking gross.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Lemon Coke is okay. We have Lemon Coke. They came out with a Peach Coke. That was horrible. Don't ever drink Peach Coke. Lime Coke, terrible. Lemon Coke is good, though.
We have Vanilla Coke here. And I was all down for that. They even had Vanilla Orange Coke, which was interesting. Although I prefer just the regular vanilla Coke. But this cinnamon stuff and that peach crap you said, I don't want anything like that. Shout out to Momo Watanabe. She might like the peach Coke, but not me on there. We have to put that away. Give me the Coke Plus, the healthy Coke there. We need to bring that to America, I feel like. So let that be a campaign to all the Pure Heart listeners out there. If you are hearing this campaign for Coke Plus to be brought to the West, it's time that we stop letting Japan hog all this cool soft drink inventions that we have there. That's just my opinion. But
my favorite cola in Japan is called Metz Cola, which is also zero calories. And I have had people tell me, if you drink Metz Cola, you will lose weight. And I'm like, that sounds like bullshit, but I do like the taste of Metz Cola. So anyways.
Anyways, only one thing on that. Did you see the tag league final for New Japan where they had the Zimas out? Like, what was that all about? Is that popular in Japan?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who drinks Zimas except white people, so.
Thankfully, I know nobody who ever drank those, even in the 90s. So I'm thankful for that. But unfortunately, we didn't come on to talk about soda and food. Although I like those topics. Maybe that'll happen one day, the culture of Japanese food. I mean, you'd be the one to go.
Yeah.
You're a food expert, WH. I've seen your Twitter.
you should change the show name to Pure Heart, Pure Sugar. Food all for like half an hour.
Yes, I'm all for that. That'll be a special edition. Maybe an April Fool's edition, but what was not a prank was that you were there live for the year in Climax, and you were joined by 1,334 fans all there, and I'm sure many other people backstage. Allegedly, maybe there were less people or more people. We don't know. But that's the official number they gave. One of their biggest draws of the last couple of years, you know, since Io Shirai's leaving the Stardom show. So we got a good house for this, Bushiroad's first show. They had some sponsors on the ring, on the pictures you took there, WH, I noticed. So Bushiroad already making their presence felt, in many ways on this show. Did the experience change a little bit? Because I remember when New Japan was more involved in NOAH, it's like they took the streamers away. They changed a bunch of stuff around in terms of how you bought merchandise. Was there anything like that compared to last time, or was this more or less just the same Stardom experience when you went to the show?
No, I'm gonna say is very different than my usual experience at Stardom. And I've been going to Stardom shows for like the last 2 years. Like a lot of the Korakuen Hall shows I've been to when I can get out to Tokyo to see them. So talk about the merchandise. So first thing is like you know, if you go, if you've ever been to Corken Hall, and like a lot of people know, when you enter the fifth floor and you go through the lobby, you got to kind of go to this, like through the second room, which is where if you're going to an All Japan show or starting before, this is where you keep the merchandise. And like all the talents are usually there selling their t-shirts and buttons and wherever. Like, this is where like Yuma Aoyagi would try to like force you to buy one of his towels so you can like swing it around when he does his entrance and gets mad at you if you're using Kento's towel instead of his. But anyways, I digress. So there was no merchandise. There was one table and it looked like you had to get in this big ass line to get to this one table that had a few like looked like 8x10s and like I think Julia's new photo book and the Hazuki like memorial photo book. Like, I don't know, because I couldn't see it from like my distance. I see what they have over there. It didn't look like much, and I thought, okay, maybe the stuff is in the regular lobby of Corken Hall and there was nothing there. And I thought with my friend Steven, I said, maybe they're gonna sell stuff during intermission. But here's the thing, Dylan, there was no intermission. And then we thought maybe they're gonna sell stuff after the show, but by the time the show ended, by the time Mayu was doing her speech, and just before, I guess, Momo with Anime came out, right, to challenge her for the red belt, I left because I was like, I don't want to miss the train, and I know there's this huge concert that's just probably gonna get out, and I don't want to catch the crowd. Unfortunately, I caught the crowd. There was all these people, all these fans of this Japanese idol group called Arashi, which means storm, by the way, and they were all on the train too, and it was just like crazy. It was super. It felt like morning rush hour on a Tokyo train, which you never want to experience. Believe you me, just take my word for that. But it was very different, though. Like, I was like, wow, where are all the gimmicks? Like, I wanted to buy some gimmicks, right? You know, maybe like see if there was like you know, like a sweater or T-shirt for like Konami, who I like, or whatever, right? Nothing. I couldn't buy anything. Like, it was weird. And then you might see the pictures, like the stage setup was completely different. They did the full Corken, right? Not where they have the stage where people make entrances. And the way the wrestlers entered from backstage into the arena was completely different. It was more akin to how they do it with like All Japan, actually. Not so much New Japan, but how All Japan like has their wrestlers enter from different sides of Corken to like the red corner and the blue corner respectively, you know?
Well, and that's interesting to note, that already, like, you know, this was really the debut for Bushiroad's stardom, and not necessarily the in-ring product, but the surrounding area of the arena, of how they do things, has changed completely. I guess it's something that you're going to have to get used to when you go ahead in the future. You have to figure out how to buy stuff. Do you think that, because we saw recently there's a big, big hullabaloo, I guess you could say, on Natsu Sumire. She started to sell her own shirts on Twitter. There's been a lot of discussion that perhaps some people are going to take more personal control of their merchandise in Stardom, per se, than what they're doing. Do you think that could have had some kind of effect on the merch situation in Corken?
I think so, because before, like, if you go through the merchandise room during any shows for Stardom, like a lot of times you'll see like a lot of the freelance wrestlers like Kaoru Yoyama or Natsumiere, right, doing selling their own stuff, right, because they're not contracted Stardom wrestlers, they're freelance wrestlers who happen to work for Stardom for the most part, right? They're usually out there. A lot of the contracted wrestlers don't come out until they're supposed to do the, what do they call it, the two shots, right? I've never done the Polaroids thing. I have no interest in it, but like, if you do those are like a separate event kind of thing that I think a lot of times happens after the shows, or you buy a ticket beforehand. The topic of our first show, the annoying fan, apparently he fucked everything up for everyone with his behavior. And so they've changed the policy. So like what he did can't be done again, which is like, I don't exactly know what, I don't want to say what he did or didn't do in terms of like the photos or anything, but apparently there is like a lot of talk of because of like actions like that, like what happened with him, they changed the policy of the photos, so like they're not actually as accessible to the fans anymore. But yeah, I do think it's a big thing. I think, like, you know, Natsu being able to, like, say, well, I'm going to sell through the website, her own website instead. Yeah, so they changed, you know, Stardom changed the policy of how to do photos, but with Natsu being able to sell her stuff through her website, I think that's more her not being able to sell her stuff at Stardom shows. That's my assumption. I don't know. This is the first Bushiroad. Maybe they were experimenting with different things. They are probably going to implement staff, like dedicated staff to selling the merchandise like they do at New Japan shows and with no wrestlers present usually. Like, you know, people like Minoru Suzuki at New Japan shows will sell their own merchandise because they have a separate deal, right? Like, you know, and sometimes you'll see some of those contracted wrestlers at the tables, but it's not so common with New Japan. Usually you don't get to interact with the wrestlers like you would at like a Noah show or All Japan show or Stardom or most other Joshi shows or Big Japan for wrestling, you know? So I do think that's something that's going to be very different is how you buy merchandise from now on.
Wow. That could be a blessing and a curse in some ways. You know, it just depends on so many changes it feels like that's going to happen. You just never know how the fans will take to that. And if that's that seems like, you know, I can't speak for the fan experience, obviously, or the general fan feeling on this. But it does seem like there are some big changes coming either way. You know, it'll make it more of like a professional look, but less intimate, I guess, if that makes sense. You know, you won't have that opportunity to interact with people directly. It'll be more like a corporate way. It's like, but if you want your merch, buy it. Like, but don't talk to the wrestlers. They're on their own now or whatever, you know?
Well, can I make an observation? Like, so if you watch any, you know, Stardom Corkin shows, right? You're usually in the front row, you'll see a gentleman who's wearing a tank top undershirt, a white tank top undershirt, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've seen him before, yeah.
Okay, he's no longer allowed to wear his tank top undershirt. He would wear this summer, spring, fall, winter. It's like, it's cold. Why is he wearing a tank top undershirt? Every show. Well, guess what? He wasn't wearing a tank top undershirt today. He was wearing a polo shirt, and I said to Steven, whoa, he's not wearing a tank top undershirt. And he's like, oh yeah, he's not allowed to anymore. He went on his blog, apparently, in Japanese wrestling Twitter or Japanese wrestling blog, you know, and he said he was complaining that he can't wear a tank top undershirt anymore because it looks weird. And I think this is part of like Bushiroad's like, strategy to make it more friendly for women to come to shows.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that at all. I feel like,
no,
you
not
know,
at all.
Yeah. Especially in winter. It's like, what are you doing, man? like, come on now. And like, you know, that guy, I know who you're talking about now. And it's the end of an era, like I said, but all it did was cause him to complain. And then he went to the show anyway, in a normal shirt. So no repercussions to Bushiroad on that one, I would say, on that decision. I think that's something that's welcome. And it's always good to keep a lookout for the fans, you know, and whatever on that. And especially the wrestlers, too. You know, keep everybody have a good professional type of atmosphere on there. It's just not weird. like the tank top guy. But
yeah, tank top guy, like, freaks me out. Like, I'm like, why are you wearing a tank top all the time? And listen, it looks like he's wearing his underwear, for fuck's sake. So like honestly, I'm not opposed to this guy like covering himself up a bit more. So
yeah.
If I feel that way, I can't even imagine what like some of the women who come to these shows are like, oh, who's that weirdo? You know? Like, so if it's not that big of a deal to this guy, listen, maybe he just like he thinks his like arms are like hot or something. They're not, by the way. But maybe he thinks the guns he has are going to impress some of the talent. Probably not. They probably don't think that. Anyways, I digress. Like, I'm all for making the shows more comfortable for everyone, especially women, because that's the key to being successful in Japanese wrestling is you have to draw the women demographic. And like, that's why New Japan is very successful is because they draw a lot of women to their shows because women enjoy the product, and they feel comfortable, for the most part, at these shows.
Yep, And hopefully that feeling at least can blow over to stardom now, with some different people like that, different measures you're taking like that. But let me ask you this. What if that was his only shirt, though? I said, he might not have any more. Or would it be worse if he wore that or a Bullet Club shirt now?
People with Bullet Club shirts. People with Bullet Club shirts at the show. So I don't know. I'd rather see the Bullet Club shirt. Dylan, if I'm to be honest, I'd rather see someone wear a full, comes down to your elbow t-shirt rather than this guy wearing his, tanked up undershirt. I don't want to see people wearing their tanked up undershirts real life, yeah. Let alone at a fucking wrestling show, a Joshi wrestling show. No, thank you. Anyway.
I think we can all agree with that. I just know your distaste for people wearing other company shirts at those shows. So I wanted to get your opinion on it. But I agree with you. I think wearing any kind of shirt, no matter what it had on it, I think would be an upgrade over the tank top undershirt. I would say definitely at a stardom show. But you weren't there to watch the fans, although you noticed all of these weirdos that you do at New Japan and stardom shows. Any company, really.
I can sniff out the weirdos at all the wrestling stuff going. I have a lot of experience going to independent shows in upstate New York and fucking Toronto.
Oh my god! See, I stay away from all of that. So I wouldn't know. I'd be like an innocent person. I wouldn't know who was there. But you're on it. You're on it. You're as sharp as a number two pencil, pretty much, right now. But you weren't there to watch the fans. You were there to watch Stardom Pro Wrestling. As we had World Wonder Ring Stardom, as it's known. And they had a whole show for you here. Like I said, I know that you weren't there going crazy like you're John Pollock taking notes at a show, unfortunately. Shout out to John right now, post-wrestling. When he went to the show, his wrestling show in Toronto, he took notes. So you've let him down on that end. But we'll just go through the show. And like I said, I obviously haven't been able to watch this yet. It's Christmas Eve right now as we're recording. I think it might be Christmas there, actually, now, as we're talking, in Japan. But that's okay.
It is Christmas Day. It is the 25th now, yes. Merry Christmas, everyone, those of you who celebrate.
Yeah, there you go. Merry Christmas and all the other holidays, even if they're made-up ones. It's okay. But what was not made up was the card you had. Double Saya Iida and Saya Kamatani, they teamed up with Itsuki Hoshino. They took on the Queen's Quest team of Hina and Leo Onozaki and Rina. These are all like the young wrestlers in Stardom. Did you have any thoughts on this or any thoughts on these participants? Because the especially Dual Sayas have really taken off on Western Twitter that I see a lot. They're getting a lot of popularity, I would say.
Yeah, so I guess the more recent one is Saya Kamitani, right? The one who dances?
Yeah, the one who dances, yes.
So Saya is the short one, right?
Right.
Okay, so Kamitani is really good. Like, she took the match, basically, and she finished it. She won with a standing shooting star press, which I was like, whoa, that's impressive. She's very good athletically. I think she's going to be one of these, like really fast-tracked rookies who's going to get a big push like very early on in your career, kind of like, I suppose, like Hazuki did and Azumi did. No. So, like, I think she has a lot of promise to her, and, like, she's got the dancing gimmick as well, so that's a big plus for her. I think she's going to be one of these people in the next, I don't know, how old is she? Like, 14, 15 or something like that. The next 5 years, she'll be like, we'll be talking about her the same way we talk about like Arisa Hoshiki and like Mayu and Momo Watanabe and people like that, Dylan.
Kamatani's actually 23, even though she doesn't.
Oh, really? She seems really young. Okay. She's perfect then for this new Bushiroad Stardom, which I think is going to try to emphasize more on like kind of the more like adult members of their roster, and maybe I was saying to my friend like that I went to the show with, I was like saying, man, I think they're probably gonna de-emphasize like some of this younger talent, like Azumi and Starlight Kid, maybe not those two, but like everyone who's coming after them, like those Rina, twin girls Rina. and Leo, like, because I don't know, I think that's one of the more like uncomfortable aspects of stardom and like a lot of the other Joshis, like how young some of the trainees are and like they're out there performing. And I don't know, like it's not something I live or die by with Joshi wrestling. Like I would prefer, like they, if they're training with their teenagers, that's fine, but I don't want them to debut until they're adults. That's just my personal feeling about that.
Well, I definitely am not one to judge on that subject. But, you know.
Well, I'm not judging. I'm just saying, like, that's just my personal preference. Like, because I do think, you know, we talked about this to some extent when we talked about the episode of The Wrestlers about stardom. It's like, there is, like, you know, this kind of uncomfortable undercurrent about, you know, the idea of exploitation, obviously. So I would rather just that was eliminated altogether, and they didn't debut until they were like adults. They were 20 years old. That's just my thing. Anyways, it was a fun match. I did say it so much, and I do think Saya Kamitani is someone to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, I guess I didn't even think about that. Like, so I guess there's a difference between like you know, a kid in Tennessee and like a girl in Japan, like you know, 12-year-old or whatever. There's a little bit difference, I think, on there. So I get where you're coming from, especially when how Stardom markets them. So that is a fair point on your end. I will give you that much. But that's good. I really like Kamitani. Both of them, really. I think they both have a lot to them. You know, and like we just said, they're both a little bit older than the normal rookies, like 22, 23, for both Ida and Kamitani. So Kamitani, especially. They look younger, don't they? On there.
They do.
Yeah, but technically they are adults, and I think Kamitani's got something. I think she could appeal to a wide variety of demographics, not only with her athletic ability, but her dancing, her charisma. I think she was the right choice to actually win over Ida, but that's just my opinion. I know a lot of people love Saya Ida, and she's good. Like, you know, she's a really good young talent. But the second match was the Oedo Tai team of Jamie Hayter, Session Moth Martina, and Natsu Sumire. They took on a team of Tokyo Cyber Squad, Death Yama-san, Ruaka, and Jungle Kiona. How was this? And what a shame to me. And I know I'm not the only one who thinks this. But, man, after the year she had, Jungle really deserved better on this year at Climax to me than this random six-woman tag.
Okay, how old is Ruaka?
Oh, she's very young. I think she is 12, to maybe a little older. Let's see.
I think she's older than that. But,
yeah, she's 15. 15. Okay.
Okay. So she's not an adult. So she cannot come into contact with alcohol. So why the fuck are they putting her in a match with Martina? I don't understand this company. Like, they tease it, right? They tease that she's going to spit alcohol, the beer, you know, at Ruaka. And of course, they prevent it, but. You know, every time her or Natsu or Jamie Hayter, like, because they're all spitting the beer, right? They're all drinking beer and then spitting it, trying to spit at their opponents. So what happens is all the fucking, like, trainees, like, you know, Kamitani and Ida and whoever, have to come in with towels and wipe the mat down, right? Because God forbid, like, any of the underage talent come into contact with the beer, Stardom's gonna get really in a lot of fucking trouble, okay? All right, so like, why would you book anyone under the age of 20 with Martina? And I'm sorry, like I thought Martina was getting better, but she's shit still. She's still shit.
I defy anyone
to come to me and say, "WH, you don't understand Martina." Well, you're fucking right. I don't understand Martina. She's fucking shit in the ring. She's got a stupid fucking gimmick, especially in a promotion that has fucking children in it. Alright? I don't get it. Is she any good? No, she's not. She still looks like fucking shit too. Alright? So, I'm sorry. I'm sure she's a nice person, but I don't want to fucking see her in any fucking wrestling promotion that I want to watch. That's my rant there about Martina. Jamie Hayter I like. She needs to get rid of the fucking drinking gimmick though. As well, but, you know, like, and so does Natsu, to be fair. I don't want to pick on the Gaijins, but it's like, no one should be drinking beer in a match with fucking children in it, okay? Or teasing, you're gonna spit that shit. Cause like, you fuck it up one time, you're all big shit with the Japanese fucking police, alright?
And, I mean, you know, like, that is somebody's daughter, you know, in there. Like, that's kind of irresponsible, to be honest with you. I'm kind of coming along on your side, even though I feel like, at first, like I said, I'm really not the person to judge on that. But that's not good, like, at all, that they did that. And I personally, like I said, I really don't like this because if you remember in the 5-star Grand Prix, Natsu had such a great, like, run, I thought, building her character and actually having character development. And it's like they kind of just threw all that away now. And she's back to doing stuff with Martina and doing her regular stuff, which she's really good at. Don't get me wrong. She's very entertaining. But I thought there was actual growth in her character in the tournament. And it's like they kind of just threw it all away now. So I'm not a fan of that at all, just to go back to this stuff. And they've been doing it through the tag league, but still, I just thought that was really bad. I think this whole match was like a mismatch of booking. You have the stuff with Ruaka with these alcoholic type gimmicks, I guess you could say. Jungle in the second match, she really deserved a lot better. And I thought Sumire really had a lot to her that they kind of took away here. And that's just my opinion on all of that. There, I like it's Jamie just, too. She's a good worker.
It's just an opening match, you know, like the match we talked about before. That was a dark match. This is like the first official match of the actual show. So, and it was just an opening match. It's just to warm the crowd up. So, you know, nothing special.
I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't even think about, like, what you said about Ruaka at all. They just thought that, like, she might as well have just been another name that they put in there. And maybe they realized it afterwards. And like, wait a minute.
No, they realized it because they didn't do the spot. If it was Jungle in the position, they would have spit the beer in her face. Like, but they made a point not to actually hit her with the beer because, like, they know she's under 20. So.
Of course. I'm saying that, like, the people who booked this match, it was like she was just a random name. But the wrestlers, yes. Thankfully, they were very mindful of that. Overall. But I just think from a booking standpoint, they could have done a lot better for Jungle and Natsu as well. The Artist of Stardom match was next. You had Queen's Quest, Azumi, Momo Watanabe, and Utami Hayashishita. They took on the team of Saki Kashima, Starlight Kid, and Tom Nakano. Another person who, to me, is like one of the most improved talents in Japan anywhere. And kind of stuck in this, you know... To me, the card really picks up after this match. This is like the end of the undercard matches, pretty much. But did you have any thoughts about the Artist of Stardom match here?
I thought it was fun. A little sloppy in parts, like, but I felt that way about like the show as a whole. Like, I didn't feel like a lot of the wrestlers were as crisp. I don't know if it's because they were nervous because Kidani was in the audience, you know? He opened the show, by the way. He opened the show before the first match, and he did an angle with Hana Kimura, okay? So they introduced him. He's thanking all the fans. Thanks for coming. This is the first Bushi Road Stardom show, blah, blah, blah. And then Hana Kimura comes out, and she's telling him something, and I couldn't catch everything, but I asked my friend, what did she say? He's like, she's mad at him because he doesn't follow her on Twitter. And then he's trying to, like, he's blubbering something to her. Like, oh, I'm sorry, like, I don't know all the wrestlers in Stardom yet. I'm like busy. I'm not familiar with anyone. And then at some point she slaps him really hard, actually. And then this is like to get her over as like kind of the anti-authority figure, kind of babe face, I suppose, like kind of playing into her rebel character, like the whole, like, you know, I'm different. I go against the grain kind of thing. So I forgot to mention that. That was actually quite entertaining to see her slap Kidani. I thought it was quite funny. But back to the Artist of Stardom match.
Yeah.
So the overall feeling was like it felt like some of the work wasn't as crisp from a lot of the wrestlers. That's not saying they had bad matches, but I just felt like maybe there's this kind of tension in the air, maybe from the wrestlers because they're being watched by their new boss and, you know, it's a new regime and they kind of have to prove themselves. Maybe there is a lot more eyes, like, you know, like, not Corkin doesn't always have, like, you know, over 1,000 people for Stardom shows, like, you know, like 1,300 is a pretty good number. So, you know, from my vantage point, I was sitting in the south section, which is where the orange seats are, and I could look behind me, and yeah, there are some spots that were empty, but mostly like the east, west, and north side were pretty full, which looked really great on, like, for MicroVantage. I'm sure it's going to look really good on TV as well when you see it on Stardom World. But, it was okay. It was a fun match. It never really got into third gear. I felt it was stuck in second gear for the most part.
Yeah. Well, I really can believe that with Kidani coming around and this being the first Bushiroad show. To me, especially if you're someone like Azumi, like, they're, what you said, I'm sure that's in the back of her mind as well, that, like, if they have an excuse to not, like, feature me for, like, the next 5 years or however long it will take, or 3 years or whatever, they're probably going to take it. So she was probably very nervous going into these first shows and wanted to make a good impression. Same for Starlight. She's a work in progress anyway, Starlight is, as a wrestler to me. So that's not that surprising, but hopefully the match can come across pretty well. Like I said, I really hope that Hana Kimura slap airs, though. That's all I can say about that. Also of note, if you actually look at the card, it's a lot of kind of weird matchups. Like Hana and Julia, first time matchup. Natsuko and Hazuki were in the same faction. They haven't wrestled in a while. The two main events were the regular matches, but then everyone else was kind of like an awkward pairing a little bit, or a new pairing, I should say. Up next was Hazuki's retirement, and this drew a lot of attention, online. She cut this promo, I guess we can save that until after the match. But, unfortunately, Nane Takahashi did not enter the arena, as you lied to me in our DMs. See,
you better explain this, because people are going to be confused about this. You better explain, like, the story there, Dylan.
WH was sending me these updates on DMs while the show was going on, and then he posted this completely. Then he just went into business for himself and started a fantasy book, some craziness. And his idea was that Nane rushed the ring with Hazuki. And while, I will say one thing. You said that Nane said fuck Stardom, and actually Hazuki did that in real life. So you did it. You got a little bit right on that prediction. Your crystal ball was working there. But did this match, all of this, come across on from your point of view?
It felt really lackluster, to be honest with you. Like usually when friends wrestle each other, they go all out, right? I never felt like either Natsuko or Hazuki wanted to go all out, because, there's this idea, obviously she kind of outed it herself, that she's being forced to retire by, people think maybe it's like Rossi Ogawa. I'm going to say it's probably Bushiroad who forced her out of Stardom. And like, I don't think she's going to retire completely. I think she's showing up somewhere else. That's my gut feeling. I don't have anything to base on except like, she's 22. She's super talented. She didn't want to retire. So, I think she got forced out of her Stardom contract, and they told her, you're going to retire. Like, that's what we're going to tell people. But I think she's showing up in like fucking Marvelous or Seedling or Ice Ribbon or somewhere else, right? We can talk about the rumors, or I don't want to like go too deep into the rumors. Just because I don't feel comfortable talking about like that, but what the rumors are about why she's retiring, right? But like, it's not her choice, and she pretty much outed that herself, like in her promo. The match itself was okay, but like it just felt like they were going through emotions. This is the time they gave us. We have to fill this time. Let's do it. But I never felt like she was. I haven't seen it yet, but the match she had with Julia, Hazuki had with Julia, was very similar. Like, she just wasn't into it, and it was kind of going through the motions. And I felt this was kind of not just going through the motions, but, like, there was a bit more emphasis on it. Like, I mean, there's a picture of Natsuko with Hazuki's boot print on her face, which, that's not phoning it in. But at the same time, you know what I mean, Dylan? Like, I never felt like this was a special match, which you would think a retirement match should be. So it was okay. And then, they did the ceremony, people gave her gifts, including her family, including, what's her name? The trainer, the old trainer, with her kid now in tow.
The, oh yeah.
No, what, I can't. My memory is so bad, Dylan. You know what I'm talking about. The original yeah. trainers of all the girls in Stardom. So.
Fuka, right?
Fuka, yeah. Fuka was there. I think. Hiromi Mira was there. I think. Some other people like who I wasn't too familiar with because like they may have been before my time of watching Stardom, but like I thought the ceremony was good. Like, and like Rossi Ogawa, you know, also got in the ring. He gave her an envelope, which I'm assuming was a lot of money. He gave her like a big bonus, maybe, because everyone in the audience was like, ooh. So I'm like, has to be money. He gave her an envelope. Usually gifts and envelopes in Japan, Dylan, are money. You know, is money. So that's what I'm assuming. So to me, if he's the one who forced her out of Stardom, made her retire, which I don't think he did. I think it's Bushiroad. I don't think I don't think he's as tactless as like a lot of people like to project onto him, and that's fine, whatever. I'm not here to dispute that, but I'm just saying like if he was responsible for her retiring because of the rumors, then he wouldn't get in the ring to give her a gift. You know what I mean? He would just probably do it. I was like, he would respect her, like, let's just have her retirement ceremony with all these people wishing her well. But again, I don't think it's a retirement ceremony, Dylan. I think it's like a goodbye forever to Stardom, as long as it's run by Bushiroad ceremony. And then she's going to go over to some other Joshi group as a freelancer, you know, like, and I think if she's a freelancer, she could command a lot of money. Because, like, she's going to be a hot commodity, like, and a big name on the indie scene.
Yeah. I mean, just use common sense. Like, the timing of it says right away that Bushiroad had a big hand in this. Like, it just so, like, what a coincidence. They announced Bushiroad buys in, she's miserable, then retires on their first real show, like, that Bushiroad has a direct effect in. You know, like, you know, it's just come on now. You know, you had people like Yuna Manase from Tokyo Joshi Pro. She started in Stardom, I think in the same class as her. You had Koguma, who dates Ueki from BJW and has been disappeared. The only time you can see her is in, like, Big Japan crowds now. It's never actually in anything in wrestling because she left a long time ago, and that was a shame. She was a really talented worker, Koguma was. But Tora, I think the problem with her is her style is best served for, like, brawling type of style because as a wrestler, she's really not that great. And I think that was the wrong tone for this match, quote-unquote retirement match, because I do agree with you that I think – I mean, her promo said it all pretty much. But in the end, Tora beat Hazuki here, and Hazuki cut this promo. She got the envelope, as you mentioned, and she cut this promo where she's like – I don't want to retire. I hope no wrestler has to retire like this. You know, it's all wrong. And she ended it by saying, I hate Stardom, as she said at the end there. So she was like Scott Steiner in WCW at that time. But unfortunately, if this were WCW, she would just get suspended with pay for 2 weeks. But this time, I think.
Fire her. What does she care? Like, what are they going to do to her now? Nothing. Like, I think she's probably going to take some much needed time off. Maybe yeah. pursue something else. Like, maybe she's going to try to go, you know, go to school or something. I have no idea what her educational background is, but if she is doing like, you know, wrestling since she was a teenager, maybe she wants to try to do something else maybe, but I doubt that. I just think, you know, someone as talented as she is really one of the most promising young wrestlers in the world today, like, and super charismatic as well. Like, there's, it's just a waste. And I think she realizes this. And I think she has a deep love of being a wrestler. So I think we're going to see her somewhere. And like, you know, what, to me, the most appropriate place would probably be, I guess, yeah, what do you think? Like, my friend Steven was saying Seedling. A lot of people are saying Seedling, but maybe I've driven as a fuck you to Stardom for the Julia situation.
I'm not completely unbiased about this, but that was exactly what I thought, pretty much. Like, this would be great payback if they could pull that off to get Hazuki over for Julia. That would be a very good, and also just, never mind my own biases, but just very amusing to me personally that that could happen. But I think stylistically, she's much more, I mean, and who knows, because if she leaves, she could have an entirely different character that she brings out in a way that she presents herself. That, because her character in Stardom is very stoic, to be honest with you, and more dark, obviously defended with the Oedo Tai aesthetic. But she could do something completely different if she were to come back, for all we know. So she could fit in anywhere. But to me, her style, Seedling was the best place stylistically for her. But I think Iceman is the best place for her, for the, in the grand scheme of things, pretty much. And I think, but ultimately, I'm with you, though. I think her best option would just to be a freelancer and wrestle all over. Because wherever she goes, she's going to have a great run, at least at first. Maybe eventually, once all this dies down, she could sign somewhere, but to me, she should have her run as a freelancer. She could probably get booked in other places too. She's going to have a hot name, especially after the promo she cut, pretty much. Like, if there's somebody that's not working with Stardom, she'll be somebody that they, and they obviously has a legitimate women's division, she'll be someone that you would want to bring in. So to me, she should just stay freelance for, you know, at least a few months, maybe a year. I think you might be right about taking some time off, but I could honestly see it where she really doesn't even take that much time off, to be honest with you. She might just want to get back in there. But it really, we don't know her mind state at the end of it. But I personally, I'm with you.
Oh, so. We don't know, like, if there's, like, a non-compete as well. Like, there could be a non-compete to like, you know, like what the WWE does. Usually Japanese contracts don't really have that kind of, like, you know, clause in their contracts where you can't not work for your profession. I get the feeling like he agreed to say this is my retirement as opposed to like I'm being fired, because I don't think they want, why she's being forced to retire, to get out there, and like I don't think she wants it out there so much either. So I think that's why she agreed to it. And but I think it's a temporary thing. Like you and I are saying here, Dylan, like I, you know, she's gonna surface somewhere, and I think it's gonna be sooner rather than later. But you know what? If she wants to take, I don't know, 3 to 6 months just to chill out, heal up, and just concentrate on something else, good for her. I hope she takes that. I hope she does that. And when she's ready to come back to wrestling in a promotion that will appreciate her, then I'm all ready to support her, because I am a fan of hers. I think she's an amazing wrestler. So I'm hoping it's not the last time I'm able to see her, you know, on TV or in person.
I completely agree with you. I think talent wise, she's really great. I think the last few months, to be honest with you, she had that one match with Arisa Hoshiki, which I thought was a tremendous match. But then through the 5-star Grand Prix and after, it really felt like she was mentally checked out already. And that was right around the time the Bushiroad stuff kind of came into play. It really felt like she was really checked out of everything. And even some of her promos, like look at the one she cut for her one before her match with Julia. She's basically like, well, they want me to lose, so I'll lose. Like pretty much. Like that to me is somebody that really doesn't care at all and just wants to leave, pretty much.
Well,
so,
that to me is someone who feels they've been betrayed, right? Like,
they're ready
to
go.
So, I could be wrong about this, Dylan, but like, I really feel like, you know, a lot of people will just say, oh, it's Rossi Ogawa being Rossi Ogawa or whatever that means. But like, I don't think so. Cause like, you could tell before the Bushiroad purchase, like, he was someone he was very high on. Like, he's probably going to make her like, you know, Wonder Stardom champion within the next 2 years, and then probably prep her for the red belt, like, after that. And, like, you can tell, like, she was probably going to eventually feud with Kagetsu, you know, do a split of Oedo Tai down the line. Like, these are all, like, obvious things that you can tell, like, beforehand. Like, so why would you let her go? Why would she have to retire? And why does she say, I hate Stardom, unless she's being forced to, right? So, and what is the timing of this? It has... Bushiroad. It has nothing to do with Rossi Ogawa, in my opinion. Like, and this is just my speculation. I could be wrong. If I'm proven wrong, then I'm wrong. Like, but I don't think I am. I think it's Bushiroad. So this is kind of like the negative aspect. Like, we can talk about all the positive aspects, and there are a lot of positive aspects you know, to the Bushiroad purges, but there's also like these things that maybe people didn't foresee happening, especially with some of their favorite wrestlers. So we kind of got to take the good and the bad together with this new dynamic in Stardom with Bushiroad.
Yeah, you just have to be logical about it, to be honest with you. Like I said, just look at the timing of it all. That's heavy evidence, in my opinion, on who's behind it. But either way, I think that she could use some time away, like you said, but I'm with you on what you said at first. I hope she goes to ICE, personally. But nevertheless, that whole situation was weird. It was cool to see, like, even just the pictures of, like, Koguma and Yuta Manase and Fuka and all these people that came out. I know Io Shirai and Kairi Hojo, they sent some flowers to her. That's a traditional type of thing, pretty much. So she at least got a nice little ceremony, even though it wasn't the circumstances she wanted. I don't think anybody wanted. If you're a fan, even if you're just like, you know, just look at these wrestlers as people. You don't want to see something happen like this where somebody gets forced out for any reason, really. But hopefully she can make the best of it. And I think she's talented enough to do it. But someone else who made certain things of their circumstances was Julia. She had her biggest singles match in Stardom as she faced a premier opponent in Hana Kimura. And how did this match come across? Because you had the big angle with Hana. Personally, I think Hana Kimura is like the next ace of Stardom with Bushiroad coming in. And even if they hadn't come in, I still would have predicted this, but she's the one on Terrace House. Have you seen any of her on that show, WH? That's a reality show, if you're not familiar with it. It's kind of like Mother, but for Japan.
Well, you know, like, you know, Wei Ting's a big fan of Terrace House. And, like,
yeah, I know.
You
know,
sometimes Wei and I DM each other, and he's like, have you watched Terrace House? And I go, I've never watched Terrace House. I just haven't had the time. Yeah, I like the concept. It sounds like an intriguing show. That's something I would enjoy watching as far as reality shows go. I don't, you know, like, it sounds like it's about, you know, drama between people, like, trying to make connections, which I find human relationships very interesting, and not in this kind of Big Brother Survivor type of thing. This is, sounds like more, like, genuine, trying to create genuine affection for people. So that's interesting to me. And, of course, like, I think Hana is a very interesting person as well. So I have not, so, but like, Wei tells me, like, it's really good stuff, so I trust his opinion. He's a Terrace House expert, among other things, but,
Wei on the show, we need to do a Terrace House, a podcast or something, I think, but I know is that Pure Heart.
Pure Terrace?
Yes, exactly. He did, I remember one time he told me that Hana, or he didn't tell me, but he told on the show, that Hana had a crush on a basketball player that was in the house. And she basically tried to ask him out on a date, but she was too nervous. And then he made her ask him out, but she said, I'll only date you if I win this tournament, the 5-star Grand Prix. And so, I mean, the tournament was so successful in many ways. Yeah, exactly. Isn't that awesome in wrestling?
It's like, you know. Well, it's like she knew the outcome of that tournament beforehand.
So, unbelievable. I think I need to use that trick sometime, WH. I'm going to tell somebody after one of my matches, listen, if I win, you have to go on a date with me, okay? But only the ones that I know ahead of time, not a regular one. But anyway, the match itself, though, Hana and Julia, how did they gel together? Yeah, you liked it?
I liked it. I thought it was, like, up to that point, yeah, I thought it was the best match of the night up to that point, and like, they had really good chemistry. It's a very intense match. Very different from, like, the Husky match, because, like, they weren't, like, half-assing it. They were well into it. Because I think they know Bushiroad is firmly behind both of them, and they're going to get a huge push from this company, and they're going to become – the potential for them to become, like, bigger stars, like, with bigger exposure and the chance to make maybe – and hopefully make more money is there. For the taking for these two, because like you can tell, like, Stardom and Bushiroad version of Stardom is very, very into Julia. And my God, you think, like, as the outsider, she wouldn't have as much support, and like, maybe the way she left Ice Ribbon might have left some distaste in some people's mouth. No, they were, the fans, at least in my section, were firmly behind Julia, and like there is people on the west side, the east side, the north side, the south side chanting her name a lot. Not over henna, but like a significant amount, like a lot more than I was expecting. And like, Julia, Julia, Julia. A lot of the women were chanting for Julia. It's really interesting. So, and like Hana gets a lot of reaction. Like Hana's actually very, very popular with the, you know, the smaller percentage of women fans. And like, if you go to like stardom shows, like you'll sometimes see like young girls in the audience who cosplay as Hana because she's cool. Like she's someone who's going to be an ace in stardom because like, you know, she has this crossover appeal. She's very much like, you know, she's very much like Naito in New Japan, where he has this crossover appeal to like a lot of different people because of his character. Like he's cool, like he's tranquilo, right? And like kind of has a similar thing where she's kind of anti-authority, she does what she wants, which is very appealing, I think, especially to kind of you know, like a more, I don't know how to play, like articulate this without sounding offensive or anything, so I'm just gonna say, like, for lack of a better word, I'm just gonna say kind of a more repressed, you know, demographic in a very patriarchal society still in 2019 in Japan. So like, I can see where that's very appealing to women who, especially younger women who want, you know, a better life for themselves that, that maybe previous generations didn't have in terms of like opportunities in employment and to make money and to have a fulfilling life as easily as a lot of the men do in this country and in other places as well.
I'm glad the match came across well because Julia's run so far has been pretty underwhelming, I think, to a lot of people. I think these two, like we basically just said, like these two are going to be the cornerstones of this company for, I think, the next few years. You know, you can tell Bushiroad's really into Julia, Hana. I think both of them, they appeal to what, to how Bushiroad would book their company. And the good thing about Hana is that, like you said, she does have a cool factor to her. You know, Julia and Hana, if you just look at them, it's like they can really be appealing for like idol type of fans, that they would target. You know, just like in New Japan, they have like, you know, Okada, Ibushi, these guys. Now Hana and Julia, they have the look that they go after. But Hana, with her gimmick and her style and everything about her, she can appeal to everybody, I think. And I think that's the best thing about her, too, a lot. So I'm really happy about that match, though, that it went well, according to that. I can't wait to see it now. But the match,
yeah, it was fun. It's very intense. It's a very intense match, so like, I do recommend people go watch it.
That is something with Hana, is that she's really grasped this past year. We saw it in the match with Hazuki at the end of the final night of the 5-star Grand Prix. And now if she embodied that again in this match, her intensity and more of a brawling style, she can really excel at, I think. That's something that she's really grown as time has gone along. She's only been getting better and better in the ring anyway. So that's good to see. The match I was looking forward to most was actually the semi-main event, which was the Wonder of Stardom title match. Two of my favorite wrestlers in Stardom, and probably my favorite one in the champion, Arisa Hoshiki, she faced Konami and actually beat Konami again. And we saw the last couple of matches, you had Tora beating Hazuki, and spoiler alert, the Julia and Hana Kimura match went to a time limit draw, 15 minutes. These two matches did not go to a draw. They had Hoshiki retaining the title over Konami. What did you think of this match?
Overall, it was good. A little, not disappointing, a little underwhelming at times because I felt there was, again, like this whole kind of nervousness maybe between Konami and Arisa Hoshiki with their new bosses. Also, you know, at the beginning of the match, Satoshi Kojima and Wataru Inoue were there, and like if you've seen the videos, like Wataru Inoue has been kind of like helping Konami like fine tune her triangle lancer because that was his finishing maneuver as well. So he was there to present Konami with flowers before the title match, and Satoshi Kojima has been in videos showing like doing training with, I think it was Mayu, Arisa, and Tam Nakano, right? So he was there to give her flowers, and they stayed and they watched the match at the same table as, and this is where Kidani made his reappearance, because he disappeared a bit after the slap, and I think he wasn't going to be around for Haski's retirement match. Maybe he knew, like, there was going to be some shooting going on, and stuff. So he came after this, you know, like the, I don't think he was there for the Hana and for the, Julia match, but he was there for the Arisa Konami match. And maybe they felt a little nervousness, a little, you know, like, I really find that, like, you know, like, both Konami and Arisa generally, are very crisp wrestlers, you know, like, they have really good precision to their strikes and to, like, some of their flying moves. And, you know, one of the big, like, you know, kind of botches was, like, Arisa's been doing the Os Cutter because she was taught it by Will Ospreay, apparently. And she tried for this move, and she kind of fucked it up, and she kind of missed Konami, but Konami had to take the bump anyways. But it was okay. It was a fun match, especially the closing stretch was, I thought, really, really good and a lot of intense. But I think they've had better matches, and I think they have a better match in them in the future. Maybe when they're not as nervous, maybe. Like, obviously, I'm speculating about how they're feeling, but that's just kind of the impression I got, Dylan.
Well, how do you think this compared to their Cinderella final match, which you were there live for as well?
Oh, that was better. Yeah. I think that was better. I think that was a better match. I think they felt more comfortable, you know, working. I'm theorizing that, you know, Kidani's presence, and that this is kind of a new era, and they kind of have to prove something, maybe, that kind of factored in a lot of the matches on this show. Including this one. But it was enjoyable. I just think I've seen better interactions between them, like a lot, like less, you know, not, I'm, what am I trying to say here? Like more crisp. Can I say that?
Yeah.
More precise and more crisp, like execution in their moves.
I don't like this Oscar gimmick for Hoshiki.
No, me either.
Yeah, that move doesn't fit her style at all, to be honest with you, normally. And she's somebody that has, like, if you look at her moveset, it's not like she has, like, 50,000, like, cool moves that she can do. She's just, like, a really solid, and like you said, a very crisp worker. Great strikes. Konami, a great striker. I wish they would have built the match more around that, and I hope that shined in this match when it airs on Stardom World and everything, obviously. But hopefully it works out okay and can get some work. I was happy Hoshiki retained. I think her run has been really good for the year for that white belt. Konami, I would have loved to have seen get a shot at it. I think she's really deserving and has had a really good year despite everything. But they decided it wasn't her time. Hoshiki got it, so I'm not going to complain about that. But hopefully Konami can do some big things. I think her and Jungle, they really should have tried to fit them up, in my opinion, into a tag match of some sort for the tag titles. But it wasn't to be on this show, unfortunately. And poor Jungle got stuck in the earliest match, the opening match on the TV show, according to you. So that's a bad look. But Konami loses in the semi-main, and it led to the main event match. Mayu Iwatani also retaining her title, the red belt, World of Stardom title, over Kagetsu. And this was the longest match on the show. Just over 22 minutes. How do you think this came across and closed out the show?
I thought it was awesome. I was really on the edge of my seat by the end of it. I was like, I didn't know who was going to win, which is, you know, it's amazing to say. You know, sometimes in wrestling, it's very obvious who's going to be winning. But, you know, I mean, Mayu just won it. So I didn't think she's going to lose it. But there was times where I thought, oh, shit, Kagetsu's going to win. The red belt again. He's just gonna, like, you know, end Mayu's reign after one defense. That would be terrible. But, like, you know, I like Kagetsu, so, like, if she's a champion again, I'm like, that's not terrible. That's actually good too. So it was a good dynamic because, like, you could, I think, believe that it could go either way. And okay, so execution, great. Everything looked great between these two. These two have excellent chemistry. Dylan, you know, like, I don't have to tell you that. You've seen a lot of their matches together. They're very, you know, who I find that they're very similar to in terms of, like, the chemistry that they have. They're very similar to, like, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, like, where they just bring out, like, this kind of, like, you know, more, you know, edgier versions of each other and, like, kind of more, you know, dangerous, like, risky. Like my Iwatani takes a lot more higher risks in matches with Kagetsu, and Kagetsu does the same with my Iwatani, you know, than they do with like other opponents that they have. And it really came through in this match. Like there's a point where Konami was like on the ledge of the wall of the north side of the Korakuen Hall, and she jumped off of it onto my, like, doing a stomp to her body, to her stomach. And I thought, Jesus, like, I don't know, I'm not very good at measuring height, Dylan, but it was pretty fucking high. And I was, like, really worried about not only Kagetsu's, but Port Mahi's, you know, like, abdominal reaction. So, but I think they turned out all right, but it's very, very intense. A lot of near falls. It felt like an epic match. And I was really happy that, like, Mayu got that. I was happy that the red belt got that. And I was happy that Kagetsu got to have that on this really very landmark show.
I just thought that this was a very interesting choice for a main event, considering how really Kagetsu and really all of Oedo Tai have really been, like, not focused on in terms of marketing since Bushiroad has really taken the lead on that. So to have her in the main event almost feels like a farewell to the past kind of deal. Like, almost. It's like we're bringing in a new era. Kagetsu held the red belt for, like, almost a year. Had a great title reign and everything. I just thought it was really very interesting on Bushiroad show that they would end it with Kagetsu. But I'm like you, great worker. Like, Kagetsu, like, really talented performer, I think. Charismatic, too. People, I don't know if that's really comes across all the time, but great talker. She's got everything, but I just wonder if her, like, her look and everything really appeals to Bushiroad that much, as much as it did before they came in. Because, as I said, she got pushed very heavily. Unfortunately, her red belt title reign suffered through no fault of her own. It's just it got overshadowed by Momo, and then once Hoshiki got the title, it went up even bigger. Almost, and like it was nearly the same way. Her title got dropped, obviously, to B. I think B kind of got overshadowed too, by Hoshiki's white belt reign. So now with Mayu, you've got somebody who has lineage with the company, obviously a lot of popularity, a lot of fans. I think they've settled things out to a good way, but I like that they gave Kagetsu this big match because I don't know how many of those there are going to be for her in the future with Bushiroad's. I think there will be a lot more of Hana and Julia than Kagetsu in the main event, so to speak, going forward. And I actually think Kagetsu is a lot better than either of those as wrestlers. But just everything surrounding how they've marketed them, I just feel like Kagetsu and Oedo Tai in general may be taking a step back. And with the draft coming up next in a few months, that may be something because last year they unfortunately, a very tragic situation where they disbanded Jungle Assault Nation, the best faction at the time. Oedo Tai might be getting be on the chopping block going forward if Bushiroad can run.
I'm in total agreement. I think if you're an Oedo Tai fan, like you might not be happy with the way things are going in Stardom. That's not to say like these. The wrestlers themselves are going to get the shaft, but I think that unit is possibly a thing of the past going forward. I think they're very high on obviously the Hontai army of stars and, you know, Tokyo Cyber Squad. Obviously Hannah's someone that they're very high on. I think the entirety of TCS is also like as a unit, like, you know, you hear the rumors like Bushiroad is into these wrestlers. They're not so much into these wrestlers. That might have been someone that Rossi Ogawa, you know, would be like, okay, I want to push this person like to this level and then see how they do at that level and then maybe push them even higher. But apparently all that's out the window. It's who Bushiroad wants to push and they have a certain aesthetic that you can extrapolate from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Like there's a certain formula, a certain type that in the last 3 to 4 years that they push, and that's the Ikeman wrestler. You know, like Okada is a perfect example of that. And like they also push like nice contrast to those types of wrestlers. But for the most part, the people they feel, I think, you know, they feel are going to be big stars for them are like these really good looking dudes. And I think they are going to apply that kind of model, you know, that kind of like philosophy to stardom as well. Like that more so, like, you know, one thing, like, good or bad about Rossi Ogawa, like, that you can see with the history of stardom, especially the last several years, and he was very interested in pushing and having a diverse looking roster on, you know, on stardom shows, because like not everyone's a classic beauty or is cute or anything. Like, if they were a good wrestler, he wanted them on his shows. If they had interesting character, he wanted them on their shows, right? Like, I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but, you know, if you're going to take like, you know, if you're going to take like, well, this is not the, you know, the I don't know, how do I say this? General consensus. Like, I just say
idol wrestlers. Like, to me, like, if you look at Okada and Bushi, like those to me are what I consider like idol type of wrestlers. And same with Hana and Julia. Like just my opinion on that.
Yeah. So, but not everyone's. Sorry, I'm just eating some ice right now. My mouth is dry. But
oh, sorry, bud.
No. So I spit out. Anyway, but he's not just interested in pushing idol wrestlers, you know? Like, he pushed, like, people who you wouldn't consider to be idol wrestlers that okay, but they're good wrestlers. They bring something to the roster and to the show, so he pushed that. But maybe Bushiroad is more like, we need more idol wrestlers, and we need less of non-idol wrestlers on stardom shows, maybe.
Wonderful.
You know what, Dylan? I'm a fan of the company for the last year. Like, I came in late, you know. I came into Joshi kind of late more recently, for whatever reason. There's a lot of reasons why I wasn't into Joshi maybe before, but I'm into it now. I try to watch a lot more. But here's the thing is that people are going to be upset about these changes, and good or bad, I'm not going to tell you how you should feel. Me personally, like, I don't look at it as like good or bad. I look at it as kind of like this really interesting experiment from Bushiroad into how they're going to change, you know, stardom and maybe the Joshi scene as a whole, maybe, like, because I think they're going to try to make stardom the model from which like a lot of other Joshi companies are going to try to emulate. Like, it's very similar to like how Ledette like tries to model like Pro Wrestling Noah into being more like New Japan Pro Wrestling, because they want to be like Bushiroad. They want to capture the formula. So we'll see. I don't know. I think Joshi is a very different scene from Vince Wrestling, as you know, in many, many, many ways. But here's how I look at stardom now. Like, I look at stardom as like this. Like, before the Bushiroad purchase, it was, you can look at it similar to how, like, you know, Lucasfilm was before the Disney purchase, how like Star Wars was before, you know, George Lucas. Like, Star Wars, good or bad, was George Lucas's vision, right? Then Disney bought it, and it's not George Lucas's vision anymore, good or bad. Like, I'm not going to get into debates of whether which movies are better or anything like that. I just say, no, it's very different.
Yeah.
But
I think we get what you're saying.
Yeah, and the same thing is with stardom. Like, before the Bushiroad purchase, stardom was very much Rossi Ogawa's vision, whether you like it or not. I'm not here to debate that with anybody. I just think, but it was a singular vision. It was his vision. And what happened in stardom was because that's what he wanted stardom to be. Now, Bushiroad's in here. I don't think he has that much control. My theory, Dylan, and this is not based on anything, just my gut feeling, is that at some point, Rossi Ogawa, within the next 2 years, is gonna be leaving stardom. He's just not gonna have anything to do with stardom anymore, because I think they're gonna get rid of him. I think they're gonna buy him out, or, you know, and say to him, thank you for your service. We own it. You don't. Here's your severance pay. It's already been agreed upon. Like, he's gonna stay on for a little while, and then he's gonna retire, and then they're gonna pay him a big severance, you know, and they paid for the company, so he's got money from Bushiroad, so I'm sure he's gonna be fine. But I think he's gonna have less influence on the booking. In fact, maybe he has like less influence on it now. Who knows? Like, a lot of these matches like felt like, okay, maybe it's not just Rossi Ogawa, you know, deciding on who the winner or losers are. And, like, the card itself was, like, very interesting. It's like, okay, not all these people that you normally see on a pre-Bushiroad Stardom card, they're not on the show. And some people, okay, like, are getting higher positions. It's interesting. Like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm just saying, like, as a gut feeling, you feel like this, that Stardom is a lot different, like, than it was, like, say, a year ago.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And honestly, I thought that from the minute this all came about Bushiroad, and not just in wrestling, but just in business, if a conglomerate type of company buys up, you know, a big fish swallows up a smaller fish, whoever was the top of the smaller fish is probably their days are numbered. Like, you know, historically in the ways of business, not just in wrestling. But I really can't imagine a scenario where he's not I don't want to say in the hot seat. That's a little too dramatic. But like I said, his days to me have to be considered, he's on borrowed time a little bit in this company, if anything. Like you said, 2 years is probably a good estimate, I would say, for when there's going to be something like that. And who knows, he may want to start a new company like afterwards if that were to happen. This is like wild speculation.
He might want to retire. Like he
might want to.
Did he have a stroke? Did he have a stroke? That's why he, like, you know, people make fun of the way he looks, but my friend was telling me that he might have had a stroke, and that, like, you know, half of his face is paralyzed. That's why he kind of has that look on his face all the time, you know, like, you know, we don't know. That's funny. He said to me, I've never heard that before, but maybe, like,
I don't know anything.
He's in his 60s. Like, that's the age of retirement. Maybe, like, you know, there's a reason why he sold it, Dylan. Like, you know, he courted offers from the WWE. He said no to them because, like, they had no idea. And I think, like, his legacy is important. New Japan actually had a plan. You know, they have a plan. We're going to do this with the company. We're going to expose it to more people. And we're going to, you know, so, like, your legacy is intact. Stardom will continue. But I really think, like, there must be something to the idea of him thinking, I'm at a certain age. I'm tired of this shit. I don't want to go to shows anymore, like, where I'm in charge of everything. I have to deal with all these, put out all these fires every show I go to, especially Cork and main event shows, right? So, I don't think it's necessarily him being forced out. I think it's part of a plan that he agreed to when he sold the company. Like, yeah, you're going to give me this much money. I'm going to still be involved for a short time, but, like, you know, like, kind of a transition phase. You know what I mean, Dylan?
I just think in wrestling, pretty much, this is like goes to every level that I know, it's really hard to get out. Like, if you love wrestling that much the way he does, I don't want to speak on his mindset, but we know he loves wrestling in general, and specifically Joshi wrestling. I think it'll be really hard for him, even if you're right and that's some kind of plan he has. I think eventually that itch will come back, barring his health deteriorating in ways that we don't know about. I really think that itch will come back eventually for him. You know, because he might just get bored. But really, if you're that long into it, he's been at this for decades and decades. It's really hard to get out. Like I said, I feel like so. That's just an opinion. We don't really know his mindset, so it's kind of hard to say. But I think there may be something to that. To be honest with you, what you said about him. You know, there's a reason he sold it, and that makes a lot of sense to me. But overall, well, we got one more thing to talk about before we get out of here. But overall, the show, what did you think of the show overall, the experience? This was your last show of the year, year in climax. What did you think?
I thought it was a fun show. I don't know if it's something I would say people have to watch, like, as a whole show. I definitely think watch the last three matches is enough. You can watch everything before that, but Hana, Julia, Konami, Arisa, and Mayu Kagetsu are all worth checking out. Everything else is kind of like up to you. If you have the time, watch it. If you know, someone in the undercard was like your favorite wrestler, watch their match. But I'm not going to tell you, you have to watch it. I do think the main event is really, really good, and like, go out of your way to watch that at the very least.
Oh, for sure. And one more thing before we get out of here, because you mentioned some people may not like the new direction things are going with Bushiroad. And a lot of people had a lot of thoughts, both liking and disliking, the announcement that was on this show. Stardom. They're going to have a match at the Tokyo Dome on Wrestle Kingdom. It's going to be a dark match. It's not going to be on the actual show. But what were your thoughts on this? Because there was so many, like, just insane, like, reactions to this online. Like, people just, like, lived and died by this dark match announcement, it felt like. But what did you think here?
About the aspect of it being a dark match, or just the idea, like, there's going to be a Stardom show at Wrestle
Kingdom? Yeah, just that there's going to be a match. The dark match, you know, it is what it is. On that, I mean, you know. What do you think?
I wasn't surprised by it, honestly. Like, I kind of felt like they're probably going to do that. You know, like, this is, like, their new project. They have to get as many eyeballs on it. There's going to be 30,000 people, probably, in the Tokyo Dome, Dylan, over both days. You know, like, why wouldn't they want to showcase something on at least one of those days? So I think I'll let you know after I go to the Tokyo Dome shows, but I bet you they're going to have multiple booths to sign up for Stardom World at these shows. And they're going to probably flyer it, like, they probably have talent flyering. Hey, please, we're also part of Bushiroad. Check out Stardom World. Oh, wow, I didn't know. What, Joshi is part of New Japan Pro Wrestling? I'm pretty sure they're going to just be blur the line. If people want to assume that they're part of New Japan Pro Wrestling, that they're not going to necessarily dissuade that notion. But no, I don't care. I don't think it's, like, great. I don't think it's great that it's a dark match. Overall, I think it's a positive thing, because I do think anything that raises the profile of Stardom to a new audience is a good thing. So yeah, like, I don't know why people are upset about it. Like, it's a dark match. Yeah, because TV Asahi doesn't have the rights to broadcast Stardom, even though it's owned by the same parent company. It's like if, you know, like the WWE, right? Like, you know, they're on USA and Fox, but maybe if they had to deal with Fox where it's like, like Brock Lesnar can only appear on Fox. That's part of the $50 million that we're giving you. Okay. Then they would say, okay, no problem. Well, then why can't this guy be on our show? Because he's contracted to Fox, not to USA, right? It's the same thing. Like, I forget which network Stardom is affiliated with, but, you know, TV Asahi is New Japan and they don't have the rights to the Stardom talent. So that's why it's a dark match. Like, I don't think you're never going to see it. I think it's going to appear somewhere, maybe on Stardom World. I don't know. Maybe not for a while, but yeah, like it is what it is. Dylan, like, I wasn't surprised by the match when they announced it. I was like, oh yeah, well, that makes sense. You know, and I don't think it's a good idea. I don't think it's a bad idea. It's just like, it's a logical idea. So that's how I approach the whole notion of there being a, you know, a dark match featuring Stardom wrestlers.
To me, here's the main positive of that. More so than anything else, like you said, like we said, basically, like, why wouldn't they want this? You know, it's, you know, a huge gate. You get your chance to open up some eyes to people who maybe don't know anything about Stardom or Joshi Wrestling. And to me, the best part is that whoever is going to be in this match, they get the chance to wrestle in front of 40,000 people or however many there will be, that they would not be able to do in Stardom or any company to this point. So that's something that was unthinkable 2 or 3 years ago for a Joshi company. And now these girls, these women are going to get the chance to do it. So unfortunately, and I think I was telling you about this off the air, I really think a lot of people didn't even think about that fact, about the TV networks in Japan. Like, maybe they knew and they just forgot about it, or they didn't know at all, or they just don't care. But to me, you have to really take that into consideration when you look at the way these networks work. That, like, New Japan's not going to go against the wishes of their network and shoot on them pretty much to show a Stardom match. Like, you know, that's just, like, silly to even think about. But what do you think about it being an offer match? Like, more of a – likely it'll be more of a six-woman tag than necessarily, like, a title match or anything like that. Would you rather it have been a big match, or let it just be more like an exhibition-style match? Put all your top stars on the show and let them be on there pretty much.
Yeah, that it makes no sense to have a title match to me, because you should save that for as a drawing part for like your regular Stardom shows. An exhibition match, you put like the stars, the wrestlers that you are firmly behind that you're going to push over the next 12 months in this match, and you showcase them because there's going to be a ton of people who never watched Joshi, who yes. don't know what Stardom is. And like, to me, the best way to get people to watch the company overall is to expose them to as many wrestlers as you can in one match. And I would not go beyond like an 8-person tag match, like 4 on each side, like 6. Yeah. I think a six woman match is the best ideal for me, like 6-3 on each side. But don't do a 10-person tag match. Don't do 5 on each side, because then no one gets over.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Eight is the best number. Like, I've seen a lot of 8-person tag matches where like everyone is able to get over in like about 12 to 15 minutes of like match time, right? So if that's all they have, 3 is better. 3 on each side is better, but 4 is the maximum. Don't do 5.
Yeah, I think this will be a really the match itself will be a very minor part of it. Like you said, the stuff about them getting people to sign up to the Stardom World is going to be the main thing. And just that they get to wrestle in front of so many people, I think would be good. You know, it just depends on what they're going to do in terms of, are they going to keep this to the factions, or are they just going to put all the biggest stars in the match, more or less? You know, like I said, the match itself is really not that important. It's more so the surrounding aspects of it, to me, more so. So I'm with you. The exhibition match should be how it's done. Like I said, some people were speculating, like, oh, Stardom, they could have a match on the Wrestle Kingdom show, like the main show, like I put a world of Stardom title match on there or something. But I think that if for what this is going to be, the exhibition match is the way to go. I'd say, and like you said, don't get too many people in. I'd say a 6-person tag would be the best, but an 8-person would work too if you want to do a faction like type of deal. There, they're going to play that up. You know, you could have, you know, let's say Mayu, Hoshiki, Nakano, like all stars, and throw Julia in there. She's not in a faction yet. Put them in stars, and then you could have, you know, all of Queen's Quest or Tokyo Cyber Squad. You could have Hana, Jungle, Konami, and Yonayama, I guess, would be the fourth member of that. And just put them all in there, pretty much. But the funny thing is, they've done this kind of thing before, and with company that weren't even a part of Bushiroad a long time ago. They used to have, like, All Japan Women's offer matches on their Tokyo Dome shows, New Japan did. So that's nice that they're getting back into that. They used to do that a long time ago, so... I think it's a cool thing on that end. I don't really think that much of it, but the main thing is that these women get to wrestle in front of so many people. So I'm happy about that.
Definitely.
But,
definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think we need to cut it off here. I know that you're super tired, WH, but we actually got a lot. We got through a lot of stuff. I had a lot of fun talking to you, as always. I'm sure the listeners appreciated it as well, and appreciated your live perspective. This is going to be up there for everybody, this show. I'm going to put this up pretty quick. I'm going to try and get it either today or tomorrow on either Christmas Eve or Christmas. I consider this a stocking stuffer from Pure Heart, Pure Lariat, and me, pretty much. And if you want to listen to more, because when the show airs, I'm going to watch the show, and I'll do a special part 2 of the Stardom Year in Climax. That's going to be on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. Right now we got everything from the live perspective. WH, I know you're doing a lot on post-wrestling, on Twitter. Just say what you want to say, hype whatever you want to hype, and we'll get on out of here. And let you go to bed, finally. You need it. You haven't drank enough Coke Plus for this, WH.
So, yeah, if you know, you want to follow me on Twitter, at WHPark9. I've been recently just blasting people for their shitty gear, as I am want to do on the, you know, this time of year, the end of the year, usually. Listen to the latest episode of Post Pro Wrestling, where I run down the best of the year. Like, I give my year-end awards. And speaking of year-end awards, I also... You want to hear me talk about a lot of the same things twice, but with different people? You can listen to the Eastern Layer year-end show. A lot of the things I you know, I picked for the post-Perez show, I also picked for. So, yeah, spoiler alert, like, if you listen to that and you're thinking, maybe he picked different winners for the same categories. I didn't. But it was a different conversation because I'm talking with Frick and Dylan as opposed to John Pollock. So it's a different dynamic, but both shows are really enjoyable. I think people, if they enjoyed my appearance on this, you'll enjoy those shows as well. Check out Thunderstruck, my look at the greatest matches and the most interesting matches of One Jushin Thunder Liger. And Dylan, you had your episode a couple of weeks ago featuring the match with El Samurai. Strick is coming up as this weekend. If this is going up this week, he's going to be on this weekend. We're talking an Osaka Pro tag match, which is really a fun watch for me and a really great conversation with Strick as usual. So please listen to that at postwrestling.com. And yeah, there you go. Like, I'm going to do a lot of audio with John Pollock and Wei Ting because they're going to be coming to Tokyo. I'm hanging out with them. We're staying in the same hotel. So we're going to do a lot of reviews of all the shows that we're going to see. All Japan, Stardom, the Tokyo Dome show. We're going to go to New Year's Dash, Pro Wrestling Noah. It's going to be a crazy amount of audio that I may or may not be on all those shows. Dylan, like, I might say, John Wei, I'm going to bow out of this review of this show because you should talk about it, and I'm going to go eat some ramen.
I think that's the smart play, if you can pull that off. You know, first of all, everyone should listen to the Eastern Lariat at a year-end awards show, I would say. Like, that was a lot of fun to do. I love your show with John, and I like the Hall of Fame discussion because that separated the show a little bit that you had. The Observer Hall of Fame on that show, and we talked more about the awards at the end. Our show went way longer because we had so much to talk about, and my craziness probably drug it out a little bit. But I'm telling you, WH, you got to get me on a post-ProRes one of these days. We need to have, like, a talent exchange. You're on Eastern Lariat. It's time for me to step over post-ProRes, I feel like. A huge fan of John as well.
Okay, I'll bring it up with John. I'll say maybe we can have a three discussion. We'll have to pick up – we'll have to – like, something major has to happen in ProRes, and I'll say, okay, we should get Dylan. If it's involving Joshi, definitely get you on board. I think you're one of the best, you know, pundits about Joshi, but I will approach it. Can't just be just a random, you know, like, we're just going to talk about New Japan and Noah or something. I think it has to be something momentous, like some new story has happened. Maybe even like you and I could do a show that's a special breaking edition, and then we'll do it with John, you know, Mount Fuji exploded in Japan and it fucked up all the wrestling in the country. And WH is like, is gonna be killed by fucking lava. So we better do this show as his last will and testament on air. I can try to get you on for that if you want. You know, like, I'm really fucking tired, Dylan. This is why I'm babbling about fucking nonsense right now and saying fuck a lot. So, you know.
Listen, I'm thankful though. In your last will, you had me in mind on that. Like, your last moments, you said I have to talk to Dylan one more time before Mount Fuji ruins everything. But that would still probably be better than if Inoki won Prime Minister, like in our draft show.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So everyone, listen to that and listen to Pure Heart, Pure Lariat. There's more stuff coming at the start of the new year. I'm planning to do our own Joshi exclusive Pure Heart Pure Lariat award show, just like the Eastern Lariat. It probably won't go as long, but I've got some ideas for that. I want to wrangle up some people to do some stuff there. So that's going to be the next episode. And I have some other stuff coming forward as well. So Pure Heart Pure Lariat is here to stay throughout 2019. We've been here. 2020 is going to be just as good. So with that said, thank you so much for coming on, WH, despite your insane traveling schedule and tiredness. You still made it through. You did a great job. So thank you so much for that. And thank you to the listeners.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you to the listeners as well for checking us out. Until next time, sayonara.